he's pushing the thing that monitors your heart and your blood pressure and all that stuff. And so I was up maybe 2 minutes at the most, and he says, okay, let's walk. And so I start walking, and within about less than two more minutes, my O2 dropped to 70. And he said, and my heart rate went from 60 to 95, like that, he said. He said, this isn't good. So anyway, he said, just stop. I just want you to stop and just breathe, and let's see what happens. And nothing, it didn't get better. And anyway, so that's when they decided I wasn't going home. Because everything before that was showing no problem. My EKG was fine. Everything seemed fine until I went for a walk. And then, so then that started. They did a CT scan thinking something might be a blood clot in my lungs, and that came back clear. And I can't remember now what all x-ray and different tests. And so there were, the cardiologist came in at 2 a.m. It's the first time I'd seen him. He pulled up a her. That's right, it was a her, sorry. Dr. Miller was the one I saw in the daytime. He was a he. But, yeah. Anyway, so we had this nice fireside chat at 2 a.m., woke me up out of a deep, deep sleep. Ridiculous. She pulled her chair up. Let's have a chat. Asked me all these questions, and I don't even know how I answered them. But, because we'd only gone to sleep at 1. I'd been asleep about an hour. Anyway, so they ran more tests, and then they did a test where they measure your blood pressure when you're lying down, then when you sit up, and then when you stand up. And so when I did that test and I stood up, my blood pressure went to 60 over 38. Yeah. Yeah. And my O2 just started going just like that. And so they said, lay down. Lay down. So every hour they tested me again, and it kept doing the same thing. So I learned that I don't remember the name of it. Dorothy knows. Orthostatic hypotension. So what I do is when I lie down, I have to sit up slowly, and I have to sit on the edge of the bed and wait before I stand up slowly and not walk, just stand there. Can y'all imagine me? I mean, I've got to do it, but it's just not me. I'm up and running. But anyway, so that will help, I think, tremendously, because I got to thinking about it. When I'm out in the garden and I'm bending over and I stand up, I can't tell you the number of times I go, oh, and I think I'm going to fall out. And that's what it is. Now that I know that, I can garden differently. So hopefully that's all it is. But so anyway, what happened was they kept running tests all the next morning and blood work. They came in and got blood work every 2 hours for the first bit. And then they said that I had not had a heart attack. So that was good. I didn't think I had. But so then finally, and then they took me for a walk around the hospital, and I didn't get very far before I started flaking out again, and they got me back in a wheelchair and brought me back. So it was just odd. And then I went for the last two tests, and I can't remember, there's so many. Oh, ultrasound of my carotid arteries, that's what it was. And they were fine. And then I went for the stress test on the treadmill. And so the two technicians had read all my tests before and saw my blood pressure and my O2 and all that. And so they checked mine when I got in there, and it was decent because I'd been sitting in a wheelchair. And so anyway, so they took another, I had already had one echocardiogram they wanted another one to see what my heart did when it was stressed. So they did the first one there and then got me on the treadmill and said, our goal is to get your heart rate to 150. But if at any time you're tired, you can't make it, just tell me and we'll stop. Well, I'm not a quitter. That just went, you know, 150, that's what I'm going to go for. So I'm on there and I am like, oh. And she says to me, are you ready to quit? And I said, I'm not a quitter. I said, if you think I need to stop, I'll stop. She said, you're stopping. Boom. And she hit the button. And when she did, there was a screen in front of me that had my heart rate on it, because I'd been looking at it to get it to 150. And I looked at it, and she stopped me when my heart rate was exactly 137 beats. I thought, everything's going to be all right. Anyway, then they did another echocardiogram and looked at my heart when it was, you know, doing that thing. And they said, you know, this test and what we read before you came in here, you're not the same person. But your doctor's going to read it and they'll tell you. So they put me in a wheelchair, roll me out to the hall was like a T, and they put me right here and said, somebody will be here to get you to take you back to your room shortly. So I'm sitting there and I'm going, 137, Lord, oh, you're faithful to complete and perfect what you've begun in me. I'm going to be all right. It's going to be good. And then I said, Lord, what's this all about? And when I said that, I looked up and the wall on that hallway only had one picture on it. And it was a picture of three autumn colored leaves floating, falling from the sky. Now, those of you who've been here for a while, been here a few months back, the Lord had given me a word about that he wanted us to prepare for when the leaves fall. And I'm sitting there seeing three leaves and this picture. I didn't have my phone to take a picture of it. But anyway, so I went, okay, this is unto preparation, whatever this is about. And that was the end of it. So I get back to the room and everything looked good. They couldn't come to any conclusion as to why the O2, why the BP, other than that word where I got to come up with a name for that thing where I drop too low too fast when I get up. Anyway, so that was the only thing. Anyway, so then I get home. Hold on. Do you need me? Excuse me.
What are you doing?
Oh, I put down the flash drive.
Yeah, we want to download it and replace
it. Yeah, it takes a little long.
Is it downloading? That's the question.
Yeah. It's blinking.
This thing is blinking, saying
it's spinning. Yeah, it's spinning.
Up.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I get home and I feel fine. They let me go home, thankfully, and so when I get home the next morning, the Lord just starts talking to me out of the blue. I had to grab my phone and type as fast as I could. And this is what he said. He said, I'm testing the heart to show you what you don't know. Those things that are hidden there that are causing problems, but you don't know that they're there. I'm testing the heart of my body. And I'm allowing the pressures of this life to reveal the condition of your heart and your mind. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So, what are you saying? What are you thinking? Who are you agreeing with? What Satan plots against you for evil, I will use for good and for my glory, for your good and for my glory. My testing is unto healing, deliverance, and freedom. In the end, it's for my glory. For all eternity, you will glorify me, and I will place a crown of righteousness on your head. And this is to the body. This isn't just to me. He said, do not bend your knee to the onslaught that is before you. Bend your knee before me and I will keep you. You can't keep yourself for you are too weak, even on your best day. Put your trust in my ability and my faithfulness. Have I not written your name in my book? I will keep those whose names are found there, for I have seen the end even from the beginning of time. I know those who are truly mine, and I will not lose one. Nothing or no one can snatch you from my hand. Humble yourself before me. Get low and stay it low, and you will fall in love with me. Is the enemy attacking your mind? He can only do so if you open the door and welcome him in. Why would you allow a liar and a thief entrance into your home? Why would you entertain him even for a moment? Why would you agree with him and listen to the vile lies coming from his perverted and despicable mouth? He is corrupt, and he desires to corrupt my children. Submit to me, resist him, and he will flee from you. And he can only stay if you fail to submit to me and you fail to resist him. So, you know, I've said before that so much of the things in my life are a picture of what Yahweh's doing in the church, the bride, the body of Christ. And I just believe this little whatever this was just a type, a shadow, a picture of what Yahweh's doing in the church right now, allowing the pressure and the heat and the fire and the trouble and the suffering and the hardships to reveal to each one of us if there's anything in our hearts that's amiss, that's not functioning correctly. And he gave me several scriptures this morning. James 1, 2 through 4. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith, that's what he's doing, produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And there's a number of other scriptures, but I'm going to hold off on that. Is it working? Please. Did you bring any more? Okay. So it's moving. Oh, Lord, please let this PowerPoint work. Oh, please, please, please. So what we're going to do while he's still working on that now, I debated sharing that, and I thought, you know what? If Mim were here, she'd be saying, you share that. She really would, so that's why I went ahead and did that. But now what we want to do is open the mic up and have those of you who would like to share one of your special memories that you have concerning Mim, and I'll start. I got a bunch of them. I couldn't decide, okay, which one's the most favorite because they're just all so special in their own way. Mim had two sayings that just ring in my ear all the time. She'd say, love you bunches and bunches. And she'd say, bye for now. I mean, I can just hear her. Bye for now. I can remember when she first came here, she didn't say I love you. She didn't express that. And it took her a bit to finally be able to be comfortable saying. And then she went like Mim style, you know, I love you bunches and bunches, you know. But I got to say, I think maybe the most impactful memory I have of Mim was when she broke her hip and I stayed with her in the hospital. And she was in so much pain that she was begging God to take her home, literally begging him. And the pain was just terrible. And in the middle of the night, I slept on the couch. There was a little couch there in the room. And I woke up, and I thought she was sobbing. But when I sat up, I realized she was laughing. She was belly laughing in her sleep. Like not just a little bit, like on and on and on. I got up and walked over beside her bed. Ma'am, and she just kept laughing. I thought, well, she's got to be with the Lord. There's no way she's laughing like that. So in the morning, I asked her what she was laughing about. She said, what are you talking about? I said, you were belly laughing last night. She said, oh, I didn't know that, you know. So the next night, the same thing happened. And the next night, belly laughing in her sleep. And that just so impacted me that here she was in such agony and not complaining. She didn't complain. She was never a complainer. She'd get down like the rest of us, you know, and get tired and worn out, but she wasn't a grumbler. She wasn't a complainer. But just to watch her in the midst of such terrible pain laughing, and I knew she was with the Lord. Her spirit was there somewhere. So that impacted me greatly, just to see the contrast of who she was. It was like she was pure spirit at that time. I just loved her. I loved her heart for the Lord and for people. I know that she was asking the Lord to take her home before he did, and she was so ready. So we can be sad because we miss her, but I can't be sad for her at all. None of us. I mean, when I stop, I don't know how many times a day, and I think about her because I see her house through my kitchen window all the time. And I think about her, and I think, man, what are you doing right now? And I guarantee you it has something to do with joy. Because if Lord willing, we get to see the slideshow, I was impacted by all those photos and how almost every one of them, her face is lit up with joy. She was one of the most joyful people I've ever known. And I know that heaven's a lot more joyful now because I know she's doing that. So who would like to share next? Let's keep it moving because...
So, pink was meant, ma'am, classy. Pink was her favorite color. And, oh my, there's so much to say about ma'am. And y'all know, and y'all have the same heart and all that. But I had the privilege of going to help her get ready every Friday morning and some Saturdays. And just what a gift. What a gift to be able to go and get to know Mimi that way. And, oh, so loving and so giving and so attuning. I mean, I think one of the special memories is she'd always ask me, how are your kids? Because I have grown kids. She has grown kids. And we love sharing our heart and our prayers about our kids. That was really special to me that she would, I'd go back home to visit the kids. She goes, I can't wait to hear what happened. I mean, that's such a gift, right? So attuning, but. Full of joy, always in pink, always. I just color, just spun dressing her and have it. She would pick out her clothes. She knew exactly what she wanted. She knew. It's white, it looks like this, and it's in there, you know. And when we were looking for things, she'd go, I know where it is. And it's up in the closet in a box on the left-hand side that she hadn't looked at in years, you know, and there it was. Amazing, amazing mind, amazing. So I wore this in honor of Mim because one day she said, she was giving away stuff before she moved. She goes, Suzanne, I think you should have this raincoat. And I'm like, thank you. I'm like, Yes, I want a mim raincoat in pink. And I needed a raincoat that covered me well. So this is a fond memory of our dear mim. And then mim bags. How many mim bags? And so many stories about mim bags. And one of my favorite things with her, too, is she'd walk and she goes, come and see my new patterns and what I'm putting together. Because I love the inside. I love the ribbons. I love the buttons. So we shared that. But one day, she texts me, or Binet, when Binet was living with her, texts me, is, Mim and I want you to come over. And I'm like, I've been summoned by Miss Mim. I couldn't wait to go over there. And they were both smiling, and Mim had just finished this bag, and they were both like, it's you. Oh, my goodness. What a gift, right? Such a gift. So these are my precious Mim memories, tangible. And I could go on and on, but we can't be here all night, so who next? You need a...
So I was trying to figure out which memory, because I spent a lot of time with Mim after she fell. And as I was sitting in the hospital with Rhonda, she's in her bed, and I'm in this rolling chair, and I have it facing her. And it came to me, this is the memory. After she fell, she had to have this bone stimulator every day at the exact same time for like 23 minutes or whatever. And she had to have it right here, and so she had to lay stretched out. And she's like, every day, I'm like, we're going to make it fun. I'm going to bring you coffee in bed. So I'd bring her coffee, and then I'd get my coffee, and I'd sit in her wheelchair, and I'd prop my feet up on the end of her bed. And she referenced that so many times with me towards the end. I love that we did that. We solved the world's problems, Cindy. And we, 20 minutes every day for, I think she maybe did that for a year, that bone stimulator. It was a lot of time. And I think it's one of my favorites because it was one of her favorites that she talked about. But she got in trouble a lot, so we won't talk about those. I'll let somebody else share those. Who is next? Oh, here comes Al, and then Dee. If you want, come over to the side so we can keep it rolling, because there might be a lot of memories.
I'm already here, so I'm not going to the side. My first experience with Mim, Sydney and I would come out for conferences to help with the food production. And my first experience with Mim is a skit that she was in to illustrate spiritual truths. She was the wicked stepmother in Cinderella, and I couldn't believe it was her. I had seen her before a couple of times, but never did really talk to her very much or meet her officially. So she's just a little old lady. And I wasn't as old as I am now, so, you know, she's even older than I am. And so my first experience with Mim sounded something like this.
Cinderella, you get over there and clean up those ashes. You ain't going to no ball.
And I thought, where'd she get that? That's Mim. So we moved to the lower level apartment below Mim's house, and we could hear her in the morning squeaking across the floor because her rollator, the wheels on her rollator, her walker type thing, it's called a rollator because it's heavy duty, made out of pipes, not tubing. Anyway, it would squeak across the floor, up, Mim's up. And so we could hear all that, and we know she's up and she's okay, and she made it through the night, and everything's fine. She could get up by herself then. And one day she said, Al, I'm getting rid of some things, and I want you to have this. And she said, come with me. And so I went into her sunroom where she sewed those Mim bags, windows all around, and it's real sunny in there. And that's where Marvin would watch TV. And so, and we had a lot of meetings in there, prayer meetings and Bible studies and things like that with Mim and Marvin. So Mim said, come here, I have something for you, and it's just for you. As soon as I realized I still have this thing, I knew it was for you, and you must have it. So I thought, wow, it must be really nice. And she gave me this ornately carved cane, and she said, I got this when we were missionaries in Africa. Somebody hand-carved this cane. Well, I don't need a cane, but I didn't want to hurt Mim's feelings. I don't need a cane. She said, hold it down here low and pull on that handle. I pulled on that handle, and it's a sword cane. I said, Mim, you carry a sword cane? She said, no, I didn't. They just gave it to me, and I thought of you when I saw it. I've never used it. And I said, thank the Lord for that, Mim. This thing's deadly. Mim was a pip, and she's with her Marvin now. Cindy and I got to be with her while Marvin was in the process of passing at hospice. And it was very touching. She was really soft-hearted. And I was in a skit one time, and Rhonda gave me the instructions of the part I was to play. We were having a real fancy dance, and it turned out to be the first high school prom for some of our female residents. They had never had a prom, and so it evolved into that. A real fancy sit-down dinner, and I was one of the waiters. And Mim said, I want you to be the head waiter, and I want you to be proud and boastful and obnoxious. You're depicting what a high priest should be. And then so-and-so is going to say this, and then you're going to become a dutiful high priest. Not boastful, not proud, but really put it on thick while you're being the opposite of what a high priest should be. So I took instructions literally. So I'm going around being proud and loud and boastful and obnoxious. Hey, check this out. I'm the head waiter. And I had a banner that I made out of Christmas ribbon and some costume jewelry that Cindy had from her grandma. It was ornate and sparkly and all that stuff. I said, check this out. This is a medal for being so proud. I'm proud of this medal for being proud and being so cool. Bossy, hey, get over here. Those people need some food. So every once in a while, I'd, you know, play it up like that. And I saw Mim's face, and she was shaken, and she was like pale, even pale for Mim. And I went over there, and I looked at her, and she said, Al, what's wrong with you? You're not like that. That's not you. What are you doing? And so I kept it up, and she kept getting worse and worse, and I have offended Mim, and now I realize, oh, no, she's offended. I should be ashamed. But I'm not. It's hilarious. So Mim loves you however you are. Doesn't matter if you're obnoxious or anything, but she was surprised. And I was surprised, too.
Mim became a wicked stepmother and talking like this Cinderella.
Every once in a while, she'd shift into principal mode. She had been a teacher and then a principal in an inner-city school. Rough kids. Rough crowd. And so it was a crowd something like this in a conference or teaching class. Rhonda was teaching like she usually does. And Mim was up here. I think Mim might have been talking at the time. But someone in the back was giggling and laughing and poking each other, a couple of the lady residents. And Mim shifted into principal mode. One eyebrow went up. She stared at him with a steely gaze. Do you need to go outside? They wilted. They wilted like a daisy in the sun. Mim was Mim, and that's some of the impressions I had of her while she was around. Who's next? Dee?
Get up here and talk about me.
Oh, man, Mimster, she is something else. My favorite thing about Mim, there's so much about Mim that's just beautiful, but one of my favorite things about Mim was me and my family used to go there and eat dinner with her on Wednesday nights. And we're a little rough around the edges at nighttime, you know? And Mim, she didn't care. She saw the gold in us, and she just is like, I would say, oh, Mim, I'm so sorry. I can't believe we just spilled all that all over the floor. And she'd be like, oh, it's okay, honey. You got to stop worrying about those kind of things so much. And it just changed my life, because if Mim's not worried about it, why in the world should I be worried about it? And it was just the best thing. She did not mind anything. And her heart towards the Lord was so tender. I will forever be impacted by how tender she was to the Lord. So, love you, ma'am. I know she's watching us right now.
Well, you guys know that Mim and I had a very special relationship, and I've told this before, but she was so hilarious, because she would text me, and she'd say, this is your favorite pain in the neck, okay? I'm here to ask for, you know, and it'd be like something so minor, like my, I don't even know what it would be, like my washing machine is making a noise, you know, whatever. And, you know, you go over there and it's like the whole thing's falling apart or something. She's just play everything down. But she is so cute, the way that she would always feel like she's just, you know, oh, I don't want to put you out, honey. I know you're so busy, whatever. But we would banter back and forth, you know, and stuff like that. And just love her so much and just had so many special memories. And one of my favorite things is, of course, whenever you get invited, like you said, like it's so special to go to her house. If you get invited to go have supper with her, you know, or breakfast and go eat with her and just to be able to be in her place. And I loved also when I would go to fix something and she'd be sitting in her chair. And sometimes you just get to sit down and just talk to her, just visit with her and just be able to be, oh, there you are, man. And just to be in her, just to see her in her place, you know, just to see her in her peaceful environment, and how she would always attune to you. And she didn't matter who it was that walked in the door. You felt like you were the only one that mattered, and she just made you feel so loved and just would attune to everything that you have to share with her. And she'd ask you, you know, well, what's new in your world, you know, and tell her about your world. What are you up to, ma'am? And she'd be just always praying. And here's the thing that amazed me the most. You know, most of us, as we get older, are like not so hip, but Mim was hip. I mean, she was so amazingly hip, and she was so into, like, the lingo of the day. She'd be, like, into, like, it would, right? She'd blow me away, like, the things that she would stay up with and the communication that she would communicate about news and, oh, have you seen this YouTube ad? You know, oh, this guy, you got to check this out. She's always into the latest, like, and you're like, oh, my gosh, yeah, I heard about that through, you know, like, Scott and Kelly or something. I'm like, you're watching that? Like, what? You know, she's like, oh, very much into staying right into current what's going on. Knew the news, you know, the spiritual weather, spiritual climate, and she would tell you what's going on, and she'd ask you, you know, well, what do you think about this, you know? And just, I love that she would interact in that way, that just so real. She's just so real. She was just always so humble and yet so wise. And she, you know that she knows way beyond what she's leading. You know, she'll share something with you, but she knows a lot behind that of what's going on. And you're like, wow, man, I never even realized the depth of that. She'll tie things together. Just beautiful. Just a very amazing, brilliant woman who, and of course, just we could go on and on, like you say, because, I mean, there's so many things. And one of the most precious things was when she used to read to all of us. Remember when she'd have us over and she'd read from the bride? She read, and we would go there and we'd all cuddle and huddle in that room there, and we would just all be nice tight group, and she just read with the most beautiful storytelling that brought you right there. And just precious, and just so thankful for her being in my life and our lives. And yep, thankful for Mim. We love you, Mim. Oh, who's next? Sally? Danny. Yay.
Hallelujah.
We're going to finish
this. You're going to finish this?
Yeah, let everybody share and then we'll do that.
Okay, well, sit down then.
Yeah,
she's
it
waiting
might be a
to
little
do
bit.
It. All right. Whoever stands. There you go.
Whoever stands.
I stand with me. No, without standing. Yeah. Well, I just, I had the privilege of living with Mim and Marv in the early days. A few of us have, and et cetera. And I just can, she was my facilitator
with another lady when I first came. So there's just so many stories, so many sweet things. And she'd always tell me, well, with you, I learned what not to do. I mean, she really did, like trying to bless me and trying to, and I'm just like, oh, you know, and so, but she could turn a blessing, one blessing, you know, when I was learning into a run-on sentence like nobody. And after a while, I'm like, why am I starting to have a hard time? And it was like, because she was blessing me and blessing me with just one, you know. And that's one of our favorite stories is how she can do that. She just had a way of attuning to people, right? We all know so much about her. But I think that just to pull a few things down is how she took care of Marv, you know, for many years, just her committed heart of love. And every weekend, you know, he'd want to go into town and she just, you know, we'd get in the car and go and just make the rounds to Costco or Cracker Barrel. And she would just take him because he really wanted to get out. And she just really was committed to loving people. And I saw her do it over and over to myself and others and just really laying down her life for people. Let me think. There was, oh, dear, the blank. But the way, hold on, give me one second. Hi, ma'am. I think she just was so available and just always down for praying and being with the Lord and with people and getting in the Word. That's another thing that was really special. And just happy to be with you, as we all know. There was one over here. I can see it in my imagination. But, you know, it might not just be for now because it's kind of, yeah, right there. And so anyways, I think I can have someone else come up. But I really love ma'am, and we all know that. She's real special, so we can't say enough. And Karen, if it comes back and is that important, I'll come say it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, wait, I just came to me. Thanks, Brad. Okay, how many remember Mim burning the candle in the midnight hour when we would be up here having house church and the presence of the Lord would come and we'd be praising and worship and then we'd be having the Lord moving on behalf of people. And I'd look over and Mim would still be here, 11:30, 12, sometimes 1, and she'd just be entering in. I mean, right? And I remember some people saying, I ain't leaving if Mim is still here. You know, like, I remember hearing that the next day or something. Like, Mim's still here. I wasn't about to leave, you know. Like, just press it in. So that was my memory. That was just so special.
You're welcome. Well, I love Mim. I miss her. But anyway, one of my favorite memories with her was we were out haying the field next to her field. And she was standing there and she was, I wished I could help. I said, well, I'll tell you what, ma'am. I got this bale over here that fell off the truck. Maybe you can help me just put it on the truck. I think it weighed about 4 pounds. It was a really, really light bale. And I set it down and I stepped back. Now, I want you to make, don't strain too hard. So she picked it up and almost threw it over the truck. And she says, wow, that was cool. So she got to help us put the hay on the truck. Oh, great. You'll get to see that in there. And one thing about Mim that I really loved is that she served as an inspiration for me to know how to do, when you get a little bit older and when you have to take care of somebody, she was my inspiration by the way she loved and took care of Marv. And that was an inspiration to me, to sort of like a guiding light for myself. I'm glad to be able to follow in her footsteps in that way. And I'll miss Mim. We'll see her again. We'll talk with her soon.
So sweet. Gosh, with Mim, I've been sitting there going, now, how do you pick? How do you pick just the short thing? Because she's Mim, and she was just such a gift to us still. But I would have to say, there's just two things. One was the more recent one. Suzanne around her, someone had mentioned for her birthday to go ahead and send her notes or something to where she was out in Heston. And I'm like, oh, great idea. So for me, it's like life gets full, and if I don't do something right away, it doesn't get done sometimes. So I got it done, and I thought, if I mail it now, it's going to get there like on Monday. And her birthday was like Thursday, Friday. I'm like, oh, well, whatever. It's birthday week, right? So sure enough, Monday comes, and she gets it. And I get this phone call, and it says, Mim is calling me. I'm sitting at work, and I'm like, what? So I missed enough to call her right back, and she was so precious. It just stunned me. She was like, you know, Kristen, maybe you, she said, oh, thank you so much for thinking of me, just like typical Mim, you know. And she says, you know, maybe you need to come down and visit me down here. And I didn't realize she was in hospice at that point, and I was flustered, and I'm like, I'm talking to Mim on the phone? It's been years, you know, and it felt like it. And I didn't want to impose or join, you know, it's her family time. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, well, if we're ever in the neighborhood, we'll stop by and say hi. And I'm thinking we've got like 3 years or something to do that, you know. So maybe I would have answered differently. Mim, we wanted to see you. I wasn't trying to be rude, but I know she knew. But it's so sweet. But my very favorite memory was a text message that she did. She was, hi, precious. She, you're so cute. So many times she was so present through the caregiving years with my folks, but I'll never forget Mom. It either just passed away or it was just like it was imminent. I can't remember which it was, but she just put in our little group chat, and it just stuck with me this so much longer, all these years. She says, you know, Crystal, I just see a picture of you. And she says, it's like there's two parts of you. And she just says, you know, of course there's a part of you that's grieving and sad, but I see another part of you, and you're soaring with the Lord. You're doing really, really well. And it's been such a gift, not just for that moment. It was like, you know what, I'm not falling apart. I mean, I am, but I'm not. And then it's like through all the hard stuff in life, it's like you can be both. You can still be soaring and doing amazing and really floundering and trying to figure out what on earth am I going to do tomorrow. But anyways, those are mine.
Well, how many of us here were recipients of a free cup of ice cream from Culver's because of Mim? I see lots of hands out there. That's one of my favorite memories. She loved going to Culver's whenever we were out for, you know, a haircut or a doctor's visit or whatever that I might have had the privilege to take her on. And she always wanted to go to Culver's and get that kid's hamburger on sourdough bread. Yeah. And then she, you know, she had a stack of coupons that thick in her wallet for free cups of ice cream. So that was a fun, fond memory. But I also had the blessing, like Suzanne, of taking care of Mim for a season on Thursday mornings. That was my morning that I got to go fix her breakfast and help her shower for the day and get dressed. And it was just so, it was just so fun to watch her and aspire, you know, like when I get to be 90 years old, I hope that I can do that. I hope I can. I mean, and you're right. Her mind was just as sharp as a tack. And I would walk in, and she'd say, "Okay, sit down here." And well, like, you want me to start breakfast? No, let's sit down here. I want to hear all about your mom. Now, what's the latest with your mom? You know, or whatever the, you know, drama was in my life at the moment. So she was always so attuned, and sometimes, you know, we'd get to talking and all of a sudden I'd be like, Mim, I'm going to get so in trouble with Cindy. It's 9 o'clock. We were supposed to have breakfast, you know, for you an hour and a half ago. Cindy's going to be like, so we were always afraid of police Cindy. But anyway, when I heard that Mim had left the farm and gone down to be closer with her family, you know, part of me was sad for you all, knowing how much you would miss her, but I was also just inside, just really joyful in my heart, knowing she was getting that much closer to being where she is now, and this is what she ran a race for, so we're so excited that she's where she always strived to be. So I hope we can all do it as well as Mim did. Go to Culver's that I don't think about Mim ever.
Me neither. And I, she kind of stole my glory on the coupon thing, because I always thought that was cool. But it was also kind of on Cindy too, because, and this is kind of a confession, okay? Because, yeah, I know it, right? So I mean, who didn't have a great time with Mim? I mean, she's just her memory. I mean, and just the fact that we can all get together and be so joyful over a memory of a person like this, it's just incredible. So I just love it. But I do have to confess. There was this time, I can't remember which one it was or whenever it was, and I was sitting over in this section, which I normally don't do. It was always kind of over here, and I always use the men's bathroom back there. Well, Cindy had come out of the bathroom, and it had been quite a bit of time with Mim in there, and I got this glaring look from Cindy. And I'm like, what did I do? What, you know, and if you guys all know Cindy, you know what I'm talking about. It was like this. I mean, it was like, and so I'm like, what did I do? Well, here I am. I'm going to confess what I did, okay? Because it was a horrible thing, and I went into that bathroom, and I left the seat up. I mean, and it's because I'm sorry. I mean, these are kind of things that need to come up, and I know she hears me, and it's like I'm sorry, and it's because I was so drilled because as growing up, it was always be sure you lift that seat. It was never lower the seat. It was always make sure you raise that seat. Right? So I Scott. I was kind of raised that way, so it's kind of counter for me to lower the seat. And so, I mean, you know, I didn't. And she sat down and got into the seat, and Cindy had to pull her out of the seat. Now, Mim didn't say a word. Sweet little Mim didn't say a word. But those eyes got me, because she was watching and knew who was last in the bathroom.
I asked the Lord if I should share this story before Scott came up. And I feel I'm supposed to because her sense of humor, right? Yeah. Amazing sense of humor. So 8 years ago, I'm new on the farm. I'm a new staff member. I don't know anything. I'm a little insecure about this position. And I'm helping do sound and music a couple months later with Juliana. Such a great experience. And Mim is going to sew something for the play. So for the boys that lived with me. So I left her a text. Mim, I dropped off the boy's shirt on your porch. But I didn't put the R. So this is Mim. I do this to Mim. I have no idea I do this. So I go up to the refuge, and we're practicing singing with Rhonda and Benita, and they're busy singing their beautiful songs. She sends me a text. Reread your text. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I said that to Mim. And so I'm laughing. She's laughing. She thought that was the funniest thing ever. She laughed about that so hard, and she told all the staff. So that is absolutely one of my favorite memories. This brand new on the farm, this little precious lady thinks that's hilarious.
Hi. I originally came out here, public speaking is not my thing, so I was like, I'm not going to get up and speak, but sorry. Mim was always someone who I feel like followed the spirit and followed her heart, so I want to be like her, so that's what I'm doing. I'm Cassie. I know a lot of you. I don't know some of you, so I'm Cassie, just for introducing myself. I feel like the biggest impression that Mim left on me is she always knew what you needed without saying anything. Even if it was just a smile from across the room or her little leg tap, she does. Holding your hand, her soft hands, she just always knew what you needed. And that just left such a big impression on me. It was such a living when I lived here, it was such it was something I looked forward to. And even, you know, I'm not as consistent with coming back out here, but when I do, the last time I was here, I brought my 4-year-old with me, and we were at her house, and she was getting bored, you know, all the 4-year-old things. And she's like, here, let me get my buttons. And I think she had Rhonda go get her big jar of buttons that she used for her mem bags. And I just remember she got the, like, a muffin tin out, and she said, okay, Elise, you're going to sort through all the buttons, color coordinate the buttons. And I don't know, makes me want to cry. She's just such, again, she knew exactly what my 4-year-old needed without saying it. And she, I know she's left an impression on all of us here, but she's really someone that I want to continue to strive to be like. And here I am public speaking because of her. So.
Some of my memories with Mim are different, obviously. I met her the first time. It was shortly after Marv died, so I never got to meet Marv. And through the years then, just being able to go and just converse with her and, you know, just get to know her better. And again, everything you said, 100% true, always wants to know about you. And I talked to her in April, so we connected on the phone, and even then, you know, you could tell things were slowing down, but just she gets on the phone. I want to know everything. Don't leave any detail out. How is everything going? And, you know, it's just so like her. But I remember, you know, going through that really difficult time in our lives and her speaking over us. We talk about that so much as a family. And, you know, we recorded it and we play it often. And, you know, in this big circle and how she spoke over us. And sitting at her feet, and that's the memory I have, the privilege of sitting at her feet and being able to pray over her and her pray over me. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just her position and in the kingdom of Yahweh. I mean, just incredible. Incredible. So that is a memory that I always hold so dear to my heart. And, you know, eternity is an awful long time to reap what you've sown on this earth. And well done, good and faithful servant. I'm like the homecoming that she got, the fanfare. Can you imagine the fanfare and the colors and I'm thinking flags and just everything. Just she's home. She's home. And so, yeah, loved Mim.
Hi there. Well, I'm Christy. That was my daughter, Cassie, super proud of. And Cassie and I moved to the farm at the first of 2011, and Mim and Marv moved here in October. So that's when I got to meet her and to get to know her really well. And I just can't say how much she really impacted my life, just being who she was, her devotion to Yeshua, the surrendered life that she lived. I mean, she was an unbelievable mother, friend, mentor, teacher, grandmother, great-grandmother. I mean, so many things. And she was one of my facilitators with my Encounter God sessions for the 2 years that I lived here. And for years after that, I would come back. And, oh, she just meant the world to me, which is hard for me to get up here because I'm shaking. I'm not a public speaker either. But I just wanted to honor her, so I wore my pink. And I brought my Mim bag, and pink always makes me think of her. And there's so many stories, but the one I wanted to tell was in 2012, maybe you remember this, Rhonda and Mim took me to Canada. Rhonda was going to teach at a church there, and I got the privilege of sharing my testimony. And I had flown maybe 3 times in my life. And I had never flown out of the country, so you can imagine I was really nervous. So we're on the plane, and I'm sitting there, and we're buckled in, and we hit a ton of turbulence. Like, the plane, it just feels like the plane's bouncing, and I'm, like, kind of in a quiet panic. And I look over at Rhonda. I was sitting next to you. Rhonda's, like, not even fazed by it. She's got her eyes closed. I know she's like meeting with the Lord. I know you are. And I'm thinking, oh no, I can't bother her. And then all of a sudden this hand reaches out, this soft, sweet hand from across the aisle, and it was Mim. And she knew, just like everybody said, she knew exactly what I needed. And she grabbed my hand, and she held it, and she gave me that little wink. Ah, and it was just so sweet. She didn't have to say a word. Wow. And, you know, that was the thing about her. She didn't have to say anything. She could look at you. It could be her touch. It could be her little wink. And you felt so loved. I mean, you were loved, and you were accepted. And I'm just so thankful for having known her and being able to call her a friend. And super happy for her that she's graduated to heaven, and she's with our King. And, you know, I don't know how many people around her say that, but I've always said, when I grow up, I want to be Mim. So that's like my goal, to be as much in love with Yeshua as she was, and to touch people's lives. So, Mim, I love you bunches and bunches.
I like that, because we all said it. When we grow up, we want to be like Mim. Still do. With that, what impressed me so much with Mim is she's so teachable. So you remember she'd sit over here, and it was like everything that anybody up here, it didn't matter. She just wanted to learn and learn. And it just always surprised me. I remember one time, I think I shared something, and she came up to me. She goes, "You got to come over here because I want to learn more from you." And I'm like, well, there's something wrong with this, you know, because I need to learn from you, Mim. But she always was just like that way. And I think that's just something for us to really, she just left us a legacy. And then before we got to, Bina and I got to see Mim May 1st, and it was down in Heston, and we walked in, and we were traveling. She goes, she wanted to take us on a tour, and you just wouldn't believe how she treated. She goes, "Everybody, meet my friends," and she just kept going on and on, like, you know, "Here are my best friends," and so she just made us very, very special. So there's just so much to say about Mim, but I love her, miss her so much. And one more story. First, it was years ago, and Mim hadn't fallen, and I was overseeing the orchard. And I'm not kidding. We had a day. We're going to prune the orchard and take care of it. And here comes Mim. She had her boots on. You know, she had this big old hat on. And she's like, "I'm reporting for duty," you know, and I'm like, "Mim," and I am not kidding. I put her to work.
I'll share a couple things. One, I loved you when I lived at the Joy lower level. I loved going upstairs and helping Mim send an email. It was just a special memory working on technology with her. And then the other thing was, she asked me one time to bring her to an appointment. I think it was also when I was living at, below her. And so I brought her in my vehicle, and we parked. I think we were at Hy-Vee. After we went to her apartment, we went to Hy-Vee. And so let me backtrack. I was used to taking care of my grandparents. They would, you know, have appointments or need to go run errands or something. And when they were older, so I would, you know, help them get out of the car. They would need a walker or something. And, you know, nice and slow and steady wins the race. Well, fast forward to taking Mim. We're at Hy-Vee. Before I could even get out the door out of my car, she's halfway to the front door of Hy-Vee. And I couldn't believe it. I thought I was being so rude because I didn't even help her out. Little did I know, she didn't need my help. She just needed the ride. And then I thought about, you know, in the Song of Songs, or The Bride, based on the Song of Songs. I can't remember the name of, it's not a chariot, but the platform that, palanquin. Thank you. So I had this image, you you know, when Mim entered the kingdom of heaven, you know, on the palanquin, before the angels could even escort her, he's up there running the king. So I was just so thankful for that image, and just love you, Mim, and love you, Yeshua. So looking forward to seeing you again.
I didn't know Mim as long, but every time we talked about teaching. And she always wanted to ask, like, you do what? You don't meet with them in person? You do it online? How does that work? You know, she'd just go on and on. And every time we visited, we would go there. And I would try to explain it to her. She was like, I just don't understand. I said, me either sometimes. But one of the funny stories, and I don't remember all the details, but I have picture and I think video somewhere of it. We went on our third, because we ate with Mim on Thursday nights for a season. And we took her to Culver's. It was the last time we took her out, I think. And we laughed so hard. Everything that could go wrong went wrong that day. I poured ice water all over my lap. I'm sitting next to Mim. She's laughing like nobody's business. And then Kelly ends up spilling a whole thing of mustard on Mim's pillow. I mean, everything. The people thought we were drunk. We were laughing so incredibly hard. And she's just like beaming and going, I don't know what's going on with you ladies, but it was crazyville. But I do like appreciate like everything that everyone has said. She knew when you were having a hard time and you didn't have to say a thing. And I'll miss Mim. We stayed in contact even when I was back and forth. And I think we talked a couple weeks maybe before she passed. And we prayed for one another. And I won't ever forget that. It was super special. So, and I was like, Mim, I want to know about you. And she goes, well, how are you? I'm like, well, it's transition. She goes, I know how transition is. We'll pray for one another. So. I'm just feel so honored to have even a little season with her.
Wow. One of my favorite memories of Mimi is, the week when I moved into her house. So I just came from a season of being a house leader, and it was a really tough testing season for me. And by the grace of God, I got the opportunity to be able to go live with Mim for a season. And it was awesome because the first night of me being there, I'm sleeping, and all I hear Mim from across the house saying, like yelling out, go! And I'm like, is everything okay? But she kept like saying, go, like just, and I knew instantly, I'm like, oh, praise God, Mim is praying for the both of us. And I went back to sleep. Because I just came from a season of like just intense warfare and all these things. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to take care of Mim and watch out for her. But no, the Lord knew exactly what I needed in that season. And I needed a prayer warrior to pray over me and tell whatever that was in the house that night to go. Like, she was yelling, like, for a long time for that thing to go. And I would, like, instantly, I was like, okay. Like, I really just went straight to sleep. I was like, I know she's, like, in my spirit. I knew she was fine. And I knew she was contending for both of us. That was probably, like, just, that's just who Mim was. She was a prayer warrior. The thing that really impacted me the most is every time I came home, she'd be laying on her red chair and just her hands on her stomach and just praying, or even like sitting and walking in, and then she's at the table doing the same thing and praying, and or even having the word out. Like, those are the things that really impacted me the most about Mim, was her heart of intercession and her hunger and her love for the word. And I love that we all have tangible things of Mim, but two tangible things that she gave me was some of her Bible, two Bibles that she had. So, anyways, there's so many things. It's amazing, like we've said. One of my favorite things was getting her ready, too. She's like, ooh, it's time to gussy up. I'm like, okay, ma'am. Just some of her words were amazing. One more story. We were on a table talking about a situation with someone and different things, and all of a sudden she's like, oh, that place. She was like, oh, that place is a den of iniquity. It's just so serious. Oh, and I started roaring, just laughing. And she starts laughing with me. She's like, what's so funny? I was like, the den of iniquity. I was like, who says that? She's like, well, it is. Anyways, those are just some of my favorite mem stories and memisms. All right. Next.
That reminded me of a story, talking about memisms. She was teaching one time here at one of our conferences. And she says, she's talking away, and all of a sudden she says something about, you know, the F word. We just froze. And then she said it again. And I looked at her, I said, ma'am. You know, she said, what? What? Fear. Fear. I gotta tell one more thing. Are you gonna tell a story? Okay, never mind.
See, it all depends on where your mind is, you know? No, Mim wasn't there. She was in a different zone. Anyway, I think I got to speak to Mim first out of everybody here because she would call and order some books. And the one book she would order was The Bride. So the first time she calls me, she said, well, I got your phone number, and I wasn't sure if it was the right number or not. And I said, well, good, because it's the right number. You're talking to me. She goes, obviously. And she's like, I said, I love you, lady, whoever you are. She said, I'm kind of getting to like you, too. And we only talked for about 2 minutes. So she would call. We'd talk. It started just a couple of minutes, and she ordered one book. Then she ordered five, and then she ordered 10. And then she would call, and we'd talk for half an hour. And finally she'd go, I forgot how many books I needed. But I know I need some more. I said, well, I'll tell you what, ma'am, I'll just send you a case. She said, why do you send me a case? I said, when you sell them, you can pay for them, okay? I'll just send you a case. It's easier than dealing with four and five at a time. She goes, are you sure? I go, yes, I'm sure I'm in charge. I'm going to send you a case. And from that point on, she just called and said, I need some more books. She never said how many. I just send her another case. And she would sell them, and she would send me money in, and then when we were going to have a conference for the ladies, she called me up. She goes, can I come? I said, absolutely. And she said, can I bring a bunch of people? I said, rent a van if you want. We'll make room. We'll figure it out. You know, she goes, I probably won't rent a van, but we'll bring four or five people. She was just practical, you know, sometimes, but loved The Bride. And she said, I'm on my fifth reading, just so you know. I said, it's a good book, isn't it? She goes, I know, and I'm telling everybody about it. And she said, I said, so how big is your group now? She said, well, actually, I had to split it into two. There was too many people. They didn't have enough chairs. So we had two groups going in different nights. And could you send some more books? I said, absolutely. You send any that you want. And, you know, she was faithful about all of it. She kept up with it. She'd tell me how many, and I'm like, just send a check. It's okay. God's in charge. She goes, I know he's in charge, but I have to collect the money. Just practical, you know. So bless you, ma'am.
So the slideshow, ignore the order of the pictures. I didn't have a lot of time because I took a couple of days off to be in the hospital. So they're not according.
You might want to move to, up if you want to.
To see it, yeah.
Way back there in the back, I understand.
Well, I want to thank you for doing
this. This is as big as it's going to get. We have technical troubles over here.
Yeah, for an hour. Yeah, so, trying to think if there was something else. I think that was it. Just ignore the out of sequence. So you'll need to.
Thank you. I am alive. can't get the TV to turn off, shut the power off. It will quit working. Yeah, it's just a challenge tonight, but as you can see, it was more about honoring Mim and her connection to our family here. You know, our family's large. You look around, you know, and it's not, these are just the people that were able to come tonight. There are a lot more people out there that just couldn't come. Maybe. Is it on? Did you turn it off?
It's on.
It was on. Whoa, there it is, on for sure. Yeah, there are a number of people that couldn't come tonight. So, yeah, you need to turn it up just a little more. There you go. And so our family here, you know, we really loved Mim. She made an impact. I remember when we invited her, her and Mark to come. We were staying at their house, and both of us heard from the Lord to invite them to come and live on the farm. Because the Lord said one thing, they have served me faithfully, and I ask you to serve them. And that's what we did. You know, we did everything we could, and including the house that she was in. When we were constructing the house, the Lord told me to make a sunroom because Marv needed a sunroom and liked a sunroom. So it's the only house on the farm that has a sunroom. And it's just, you know, it's just something the Lord did. He really cared for her and took care of her, even in these last days, which are very traumatic and painful. But no more pain, you know. I was very sad, really sad about it. But at the same time, I have to be happy and remember where she went, you know, and I'm planning on going the same place. So I can't be too sad. You're just ahead of me a little bit, more like envy, you know, than anything else. You got there before me, you know. I almost had a chance lately, and I talked to the Lord about it. And I'm laying on the table. I said, well, Lord, this is not exactly what I thought it was going to be like. And he goes, me neither. So I said, okay, then I guess I'm going back to my room. And he goes, yeah, you are, you know. And so, you know, just simple things like that with the Lord. He sets things up and he moves mountains when you least expect it. So I'm glad y'all came. I do want to have communion tonight. So if we could get like four people to help pass out communion, we need two for the plates. Yes, Janae, you can help. That would be wonderful. I love it when these young ones, like, can I help? Can I get involved? I can remember being in church and they wouldn't let you touch it. And I thought, well, that's sad. I can walk and I can carry. And so, yeah, that's great.